You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
We'd rather be here. Now, today's biggest stories from the BMW of Des Moines Sports Desk. This is an X's and O's update on Des Moines Sports Station, 1460 KXNO.
And I'm Trent Condon. The Iowa Wild jumped out to a 2-0 series lead over the Milwaukee Admirals. As heard last night on KXNO, here's Joe O'Donnell as the Wild take the lead.
Period. Now Donato, left circle. Wristing one off the goal post. Rebound, they score!
The Wild, a game away from advancing in the Calder Cup playoffs. Game 3 slated for Thursday night in Milwaukee at 7 o'clock. Game 7, overtime, Stanley Cup playoffs. Nothing better. Last night, the Sharks and the Golden Knights.
Stone had the puck but gave it back to Erik Karlsson. Karlsson comes in. Here's Buckley Goodrow.
The call from NBC Sports. The NBA for a night at least got interesting, and Dame Lillard comes up big late.
Lillard, long range three, and it's good! At the buzzer, Damian Lillard! Are you kidding me?
Brian Anderson with the call from TNT as Portland advances with a 4-1 series victory. To baseball, and the Cardinals do it again to the Brewers.
As DeJong hits one out to right center, it's at the wall!
The call from Fox Sports Midwest. The Cardinals now with the best record in the National League at 14-9. In Chicago, the Cubs jump to an early lead.
That's a foul! Zobrist is in. Here comes Bryant. Fires around third. Relay throw.
The call from NBC Sports Chicago. Cubs and Dodgers. Series continues tonight at 7:05.
Live from the Wild Rose Casino and Resort Jefferson Studios. You'd rather be here. This is 1460 KXNO. KXNO in your pocket with iHeartRadio on your smartphone. This is Des Moines Sports Station, 1460 KXNO.
You know, you work with the only Canadian perhaps that never got into this band.
You're not a Rush
no,
fan.
No, I never was. Not sure why.
Well, as Emery was filling in for you last week, I asked him, who are you into? Rush.
Rush.
A kid in his 20s that enjoys horse racing and Rush.
And boxing? Don't tell me, right? Good stuff. Thank you, Emery, for doing that. You did a very nice job, I'm told, as well. Hey, so I wanted to... We talked about Carter Schulte at the end of the last hour, the fact that the AAF is disbanded and those players have now been snapped up. So I'm flying home from Vegas on Sunday, and I've told you how much I love Southwest because you can watch TV and it's free and the time seems to go so fast. And I was watching the NFL Network at some point, and I didn't realize this, but I thought, I found it interesting. I hope you do. You were, what year were you born? 81?
80.
80. So you're three. You probably don't remember.
83, Elway?
No, it was 1984 is where I'm going.
Oh, okay.
So it's, the New York Giants had Lawrence Taylor already starting to terrorize quarterbacks, right? Mm-hmm. Parcells is there by then. But they brought up the 1984 supplemental draft and what might have been. And this was the USFL was going at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And the NFL wanted to draft these guys because they knew it was going to implode at some point.
Right.
But didn't want to waste picks in the real draft just in case, you know, that made it happened.
Okay.
That it succeeded. So the Giants had the third pick. Lawrence Taylor's already there. The first overall pick was Steve Young, who left. Where did he play? Wherever he did. He ended up in Tampa Bay as the quarterback there with the awful Buccaneers team. And then
was he with the Gamblers?
He might have been, Trent. I don't remember. Was that the Houston Gamblers? No, that was Jim Kelly,
I think. Jim Kelly.
Okay. I think it was Kelly. And then Mike Rozier went too. But the Giants are on the clock. And Parcells is... politicking, lobbying as hard as he possibly can for this player from the Memphis franchise of the United States Football League.
I know where you're going there when you said that.
Right. And whoever the general manager was, now he's going to win this vote. And he took Gary Zimmerman, who's a Hall of Famer.
Yes.
But never played a snap for the Giants, would get to the Vikings and then end up in Denver where he won a Super Bowl. So with the third pick, they took Gary Zimmerman. And left on the board, who the Philadelphia Eagles took very quickly with pick number four, maybe the greatest defensive lineman of all time.
The minister of sack.
The minister of sack, Reggie White. But it's just, I forgot all about that. I'm not sure I even knew that. But can you imagine the Giants with Lawrence Taylor and Reggie White? Can you imagine?
You couldn't do anything.
Nothing.
And in that era, I mean, the physicality.
Oh, great point.
The way that they played. And then
your block off.
Not only those two guys, you got Carl Banks on the inside.
He was drafted in 1984 in the regular draft.
Holy cow.
Yeah. So I thought...
The 85 Bear defense might not be as well acclaimed if that came to fruition. Wow.
Isn't that something? Reggie White.
You know my love of what ifs. Uh-huh. You know, you and I, we don't get into summertime. We don't get into Mount Rushmore's a whole lot.
No.
But what ifs are a game that I like to play. Of course, they never came to fruition, but just that alternate path. Are a lot of sports fans, you think, that way? Or is that maybe just one of my goofy kind of things?
No, I think there's probably some of that happening out there.
Yeah. Where if we would have just got this guy,
right,
or if this game would have went differently, the path of a program, of an organization, whatever it may be. Maybe it's also a long-suffering fan just trying to find different ways to get excited.
Well, I mean, Cyclone fans can play What If George Niang Didn't Get Hurt Forever, and that's absolutely legitimate.
What if they called Seneca Wallace's touchdown an actual touchdown against Florida State?
Yeah, absolutely. He was in.
What if?
What if? Great points. We'll get into some what-ifs maybe this summer.
Yes.
So we've got a long few months ahead of us. So last night, basketball-wise, I didn't see very much of it at all. Monte Morris, how about the... Boy, he's going to make a lot of money, isn't
yes.
he? He's going to make a lot of money. Is he going to make... considering the way the salaries are now, right? Hornacek made a lot of money.
He's going to make $50 million plus.
Absolutely is.
He is...
He's playing 20-plus minutes for a playoff basketball team.
The roster construction, I think, helps Monte Morris. They don't start a true point guard out there.
Right.
With the way that they play with Murray handling the ball a whole lot. And, and of course, what they have in the middle with a guy that, with the passing ability for a center.
Right.
With Jokic. But he is a guy that can be a starter on a championship team. Starting point guard, maybe. But he's going to have a lot of really good players around him. But if you're a playoff team, if you're a team that's bad and looking for a starter and a guy that's going to nurture your culture, absolutely you give that guy a four-year, $50 million contract.
And he's a four-year college kid.
It can be done.
It can be done, and he's a perfect example, and I couldn't be rooting for him any harder. What he did for his hometown, Flint, and what Iowa State did there with the water and the Hy-Vee was involved, that was that one resonated. That one won't soon be forgotten. And you're right about Murray, and Murray missed all that time this year, and Monty Morris gets his opportunity and took every single advantage that he could of it, too.
So right away last night, flipped on. No, I was still here, actually, finished up Fanatics. And I see Raptors out to a 13-2 lead over the Magic.
Right.
Oh, I can't get any worse than that. Then the Sixers got out to like a 23-2 lead over the Nets.
And both those series are over, right? Yeah, they're both done.
They're both done.
Yep.
So we are limping our way to the finish of this first round.
So Denver and the Spurs, they're, what, 3-2 Denver, right? There's some drama there, but
back San Antonio on Thursday for that one, and then a game seven would be on Saturday if necessary.
I hope it's not.
Tonight, Rockets can clinch at home. 3-1 up there. Warriors can clinch at home, up 3-1. We're probably going to see both those finish.
Well,
but
sure,
that's
Warriors.
A series that I want to see more than anything. More than what the finals turns out to be. Houston against Golden State. It's the most compelling matchup that we can get.
I think so. I want to see Giannis on a big stage.
That'll be cool, too.
That would be, because he's so special. But does he move the NBA needle? I highly doubt that. We'll see. Anyways, we'll take a timeout. Jordan Bernfield's going to slide on in here. Want to go back to last night's Cubs game. Boy, that was entertaining. Javi Baez. I think he's the most entertaining player in team sports. Is he?
I think that's fair characterization.
See, you don't know Connor McDavid. You know who he is.
Know who he is. Edmonton Oilers, right?
Right. And
flaunting my hockey
knowledge. Yes, you are. As fast of a player as I've ever seen in the history of the game, and there's been some guys with speed. He's unbelievable. But Javier Baez, it's every single night, and it's just not, he's not a one-trick pony, right? He's not a home run. He's not
Sosa McGuire just hitting bombs.
Bing, bing, bing. Yes, it's last night running to first base, swipe tag, avoiding being tagged out at second or at home or whatever base he's on.
Most complete player in baseball? If he keeps up these numbers offensively, what he put up a year ago.
Yes.
And we know defensively he's great. He's the best tagger either of us have ever seen.
And he took a while to get to the show. Remember that?
Yes.
They weren't certain. Is he a tweener?
That swing. Yes. Get a strikeout a
Got
ton.
Got these attitude problems? Really?
Yes.
Haven't seen anything of that. Great stuff out of Javier Baez. Jordan Bernfield next. We will talk Chicago sports and Robbie Gould. Maybe, maybe not. It's time to go for the with KXNO and EKG Golf. Text the keyword water to 200-200 right now. Enter to win $1,000 cash. That's water to 200-200. Standard message and data rates apply. Miller and Condon, Des Moines Sports Station 14.
For details.
Sports radio in Iowa starts and ends right here. This is Des Moines Sports Station, 1460 KXNO.
All right, welcome back, Miller and Condon. 1460 KXNO, Mark Morehouse, Cedar Rapids Gazette, still to come, about 15 minutes away. Let's head to Chicago, shall we? Jordan Bernfield, you heard him do a bunch of basketball games this year, Big Ten Network, ESPN, NBC Sports. Jordan, good to talk to you. Trent and Ken, how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you guys?
Doing pretty well. How'd those Horizon League Friday nights came up? Appointment TV. You did a nice job there, Jordan. Seemingly every Friday night you had a game.
Thanks. Yeah, it was fun. I mean, that's a fun league, isn't it? Those teams are, you know, really competitive. The last year or two, it's been very tight in terms of nobody's really been a dominant team at the top. But that's what makes for great games. We had some nice finishes at the end, that's for sure.
No doubt about it.
I appreciate you watching.
Absolutely. Let me ask you this. Trent and I talking about this earlier, and it seemingly, you know, you'd be hard-pressed certainly a week go by where Javi Baez just makes you go, oh, my God, I've never seen that before. Can you believe he did that? Well, we saw that again last night, and we're trying to come up with a couple of names. You know, I think he may be the most entertaining player in sports. Certainly Mahomes in Kansas City, no-look passes. Connor McDavid, when he picks up the puck behind his own net and gets ahead of speed, it's unbelievable to watch. Zion is Zion. But Javi Baez, is he in this conversation?
You know, I think it's a really interesting question, Ken. My inclination would be to say that I don't think that nationally he would be thought of in this way, because I don't know if he's a big enough star yet. You know, even though we know in the Midwest, and certainly, you know, fans that are watching the Cubs every day see all these things that Javi does, and I agree with you. I think he is one of the most exciting players, not only in baseball, but in sports. But, you know, I just feel like the guys that you mentioned with him, you know, I think that the average person would go, oh, yeah, Zion, that guy is so exciting. Look at the dunks. Look at all the ways that he affects a basketball game. Or they might say, man, you know, Patrick Mahomes is just lighting up the field every week. I don't know that Javi Baez has that Q rating yet. That being said, I think he deserves to be in that conversation for sure, just because, you know, every day, you're right. I mean, yesterday, you know, dekes out the first baseman and ends up on first base. You know, the way that he's able to take extra bases and make these magician kind of slides where he's contorting his arms and legs to not get tagged. I mean, the stuff he's doing day in, day out is sensational. But, you know, I think that while he would probably deserve to be in that conversation, something tells me that not enough people know about it yet.
You know, another middle infielder making his way back off of a suspension beginning here in Des Moines is Addison Russell. As you look forward, and when he gets back with the big league squad, what's the reaction, what's the welcoming back process going to be for Chicago Cubs fans?
I mean, I guess we'll have to see what the reaction is totally, Trent, but my thought is that it's going to be pretty mixed, but probably more on the negative side.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that there's going to be some people that will cheer him because, you know, inevitably there are always fans that will attempt to show support. I think that there are going to be plenty of fans that will probably boo him. I think it's going to be a very odd sort of reaction, and I'm very curious to see what it's going to be. You know, for me, I think that what he did, allegedly or otherwise, is obviously abhorrent behavior. But because the Cubs are choosing to let him rehab himself as a person, I think that there's going to be a pretty, you know, quick leash on him if something were to go haywire. That might be the end of his Cubs career. I think that, in a sense, there's a nobility in what they're trying to do and trying to give somebody a second chance. You know, whether he deserves it or not, I think is certainly debatable. And but I think that, you know, the fact that they're giving that to him in a certain way could be considered a nice thing to do, even though I don't know that he, like I said, maybe deserves that chance. But, you know, I think that really what it's going to come down to is if he performs. And now Javi Baez has taken that shortstop position,
yep,
and has done an incredible job. So if Russell comes back and plays short, you know, if he plays well at short, then presumably fans will, you know, eventually kind of look the other way and let him perform to help the team. But I think it's going to be weird. I do. I think that, you know, it was weird when they got Chapman.
Yep.
You know, once he was performing well, I think people kind of said, well, hey, not like the stuff that he did, but he's helping them win. And I sort of feel like as sports fans, we sort of parse that out often when it comes to athletes that have, you know, committed crimes or done things that are highly immoral or whatever it may be. So it's going to be interesting. I'm certainly looking forward, in a sense, to seeing what the reaction is, because I think it'll speak volumes no matter what it is.
Jordan Bernfield joining us from Chicago. Jordan, we've seen Quintana have occasional good outings, you know, double-digit strikeouts, and then, you know, very infrequently does he follow that up with another good start. Well, he's now working on a string of three outstanding starts by Quintana. What is he doing? What's he done differently?
I think that from what I'm seeing, he is repeating his delivery in a way that we had not seen him do. And he seems to have command of all of his pitches. You know, when I watched him pitch for the White Sox, and I'm sure you guys would recall this when you watched the White Sox, he was always underappreciated, I think, because there was a guy who was throwing strikes consistently and had a very repeatable, smooth delivery, which allowed him, I think, to get the swings and misses that he did because he was throwing fastballs and changeups with that same arm action and that same delivery, and so it was very hard to pick up. I think that as a Cub, the last couple of years, we have not seen that, and as a consequence of that, you know, he's been throwing fewer changeups because he has less confidence in it, and I think that his performance just decreased. You know, he was throwing a lot more fastballs, breaking ball was not always thrown for a strike, and so he'd have to come in on guys, and he doesn't have overpowering stuff, so he'd start to get tattooed a little bit. I also think that he's motivated, guys, frankly. I mean, who wouldn't be motivated by this, you know, the fact that Eloy Jimenez is now in the White Sox, and, you know, all the talk shows and media are going to go, well, you know, the White Sox won that trade because he's this great prospect, and what has Quintana really done for the Cubs? He hasn't been what they paid for, blah, blah, blah. So I think it's kind of all these things starting to come together. I think mechanically he's much better and looks like the pitcher we saw more on the White Sox the last few starts. And then secondly, I think he's motivated because who the heck wouldn't be?
No doubt. Well, from the pitching staff to the bullpen, another concern over the weekend about Morrow and his viability maybe for this season. The bullpen has been much better than we saw the first week and a half of the season, no doubt. But it's still, you got Strope at the back end of it. You're mixing and matching some pieces. I thought last night, young guy did it, came
yeah,
in,
Ryan
did a really
was
nice
good.
Job. Yeah. But overall, this is still a bullpen that feels like it has holes. Without a whole lot of financial flexibility, what do you see being done with the bullpen?
You know, I think that they're going to have to kind of deal with what the bullpen is. Here's what I would say about the bullpen. You know, I think that the first 8-9 games of the year, and first of all, the Cubs were basically the worst team in baseball for the first 8 games of the year, but I think that we all kind of thought, watching this, well, they can't be this bad. I mean, I remember watching that Atlanta series where they were throwing the ball all over the place and making errors. The bullpen was horrible. And, you know, obviously you're watching social media and listening to people, and fans are all saying, well, maybe they're rebuilding. And I remember, you know, Ken Rosenthal had who I think is one of the best baseball writers going, and baseball personalities have written an article saying, like, not that the Cubs are done, but if they're done, here's what they might be able to trade. And I remember thinking to myself, like, this is crazy. You know, they've played 8 games. There's no way this team is the worst team in the league. Maybe they'll underachieve this year, and that might be the case anyway, but they're not the worst team in the league. So I think that at the beginning of the year, all the things that we worried about with the bullpen were exposed, right? I mean, nobody pitched well. Nobody looked good in high-leverage situations. But in the last 11, 12 games, 13 games maybe, the Cubs' bullpen, I think, has a 1.85 ERA, which they probably won't keep up the whole year because I think that's probably pitching over their heads. But this is all to say that I think that, yes, there are issues with the bullpen. Yes, Brandon Morrow being out is obviously going to be something that they're going to have to address if they can't get him onto the field. But they've already made some moves that would indicate that they're trying to get this thing fixed. You know, Carl Edwards Jr. is in the minor leagues, hurt right now, but when he returns to pitching for Iowa, you know, presumably maybe they can get him worked out. I think they're going to have to add a bullpen arm somewhere. How they do that with limited money, I think, is going to be, you know, something that Theo and Jed are going to have to get creative about. But I think that their bullpen, you know, just as they kind of did last year, guys, at the end of the year, it's probably not as bad as everyone's concern is, but it's definitely not one of the best in the league. But is it good enough to not kill them? You know, I think that's really what this all comes down to. And I think it probably is good enough to not kill them if their starting pitching continues to be as good as it's been over the last 10, 12 days.
Jordan, we have a minute left. Let me ask you this. One being everything is fine, nothing's wrong. 10 being, oh, my God, what has happened? And I'm talking about Chris Bryant. Where are you on the what's wrong with Chris Bryant scale of alarm?
Yeah, I mean, you guys know that I think that I'm pretty pragmatic when it comes to these things generally. But I would have to admit that I'm kind of concerned here. I would say we're probably at a 5 or a 6 right now. The reason is that, you know, last year when he got hurt and he returned after the injury, you could just see, and you guys know, you watch this every day, you could see that his batting stance was different, his swing plane was different, he was not following through because obviously there was an injury. Then they tell us after the season that, hey, you know, he doesn't need surgery, he's 100%. I mean, in spring training, everyone said, oh, he's 100%, he's 100%, and he seemed to hit the ball pretty decently in spring training. Then he clobbers that home run on opening day, and you're thinking, okay, well, you know, maybe this is the Chris Bryant we saw pre-injury last season who had a great start to the year. But right now he just looks like he's lunging at the ball. He's not hitting the ball in the air. He is not driving the ball at all for power. And, you know, I think that when you look at what he's doing right now, he's just not, you know, a feared hitter at this point. You know, he is striking out and not hitting the ball with any kind of authority, and he's not hitting in the clutch at all. So, you know, it's early in the year. I think that obviously if this continues into May and June, then you're going to be really concerned. But the funny thing is, we were talking about, you know, a few months ago with all these guys getting contracts. Well, you know, are the Cubs going to end up paying Chris Bryant 10 years and $300 million, all this stuff? Right now, he doesn't look like a player that would ever come close to warranting that. So they got to get him going. I think that this lineup has shown that it's much better this year and that they figured some things out. Anthony Rizzo, typically a slow starter, I think we'll get going shortly. But if Bryant doesn't hit, that's one thing that they can't really account for. So the concern is there. I don't know how they get him right, but they're going to have to figure something out soon because he's a big part of the team and they just can't have him.
Final thing, we'll let you go on this one. Quick hit here, just about 30 seconds left. Bears draft, no first rounder, obviously, after what they did bringing in Khalil Mack. What do you expect? What are you hoping for to see out of the Bears here in the NFL draft?
I think that they're probably going to take a running back, even though I think Ryan Pace said yesterday that, you know, that they're fine with what they have. I don't know that I believe that. I think we all know NFL GMs are liars at this time of the year. So I would expect that they're probably going to take a running back at some point. And I think that other than that, it's crazy to say, but they really are in a good position with a lot of these guys. So my guess is they'll take best available player the rest of the way, but I would be shocked if they don't take a running back, at least with one of their first couple picks.
Good to catch up with you, Jordan. Thank you.
You too, guys. Take care.
Good to talk to Jordan Bernfield, Big Ten Network, ESPN, and NBC Sports Network. We'll take a timeout. Mark Morehouse on the Hawks next. Miller and Condon, 1460 K.
Sparkle Run.
Streaming live from coast to coast on iHeartRadio, this is 1460 KXNO.
Hi, welcome back. Miller and Condon, Des Moines Sports Station 1460 KXNO. Portions of the program brought to us by Dr. Stephen Fuller, FullerDental.net. Couple of locations over in Eastern Polk County, 2822 East 29th Street in Des Moines, 410 8th Street Southwest in Altoona. Dr. Fuller is my dentist. If you're new to the area, if you've moved from one side of town to the other, or it's been a while and you can't remember who the last dentist is that you saw, it's been so long. Dr. Stephen Fuller, FullerDental.net. Let's get Mark Morehouse in here. Trent, I promise I'm only going to ask one hockey question, and then we'll get right to the Hawks. Limit it to one. What did you used to do to Brinson? What did you give him on the NBA?
Him, Jimmy B's crappy NBA minute?
That's what it was.
You guys could have more than that, because I entertained last night by the hot.
Really? Mark, have you ever seen a five-minute major where the team on the power play scores four times? I've never seen that in my life.
I've not seen it in the NHL. I might have seen it maybe rec. I don't know.
Maybe.
Fantasy hockey. You guys last night between the Sharks and what happened there, and then Lillard and the Blazers.
Yeah,
was that the best midnight sports viewing on a Tuesday night in the history of sports?
Wish I could say I saw it.
Ken's a little under the weather. There's no staying up till midnight.
Ken is right though. I mean, four power play goals. Now people don't understand how physical faceoffs are.
Right.
I'm not even sure I would have called that a penalty.
That's not a penalty, Mark. I couldn't agree with you more.
I'm glad they did. I'm glad they did, though, because boy, oh boy, did that. I mean, we would not have gotten that drama, but I do think the call was shaky. And if I were a Golden Knights fan, I would have thrown my TV out in the front yard.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Well, let's get to the Hawks, Mark, and Phil Parker, Brian Ferentz. Were in front of you guys yesterday answering your questions. You know, which of those two do you think has seen more progress? When the 15 practices started, they both had things they wanted to get done and things they needed to see. Do you think that Brian Ferentz is happier with the offense where it has come in the time, or Phil Parker is happy with some of the questions that have been answered on defense?
Well, it depends on how much live work they've done. I can't imagine there's been a ton of it because there are so many. The lava's really not set on this team yet. The defensive side of the ball has this guy, A.J. Epinesa, who
he's not bad.
Doesn't want the offense to do anything in practice. So I'm going to guess Phil Parker just because it feels more. I thought they had a big breakthrough last year with the 4-2-5 and the cash position. I think that was a monumental deal for Iowa's defense to change their thinking, to put another defensive back on the field, to give themselves a chance to better cover the spread. So I think they're fine-tuning that. And so right now I think Phil's probably a little bit happier with his dudes than Brian is because, you know, what Brian really needs to see is improvement in the running game. And I'm not sure you get a good read on that in spring football.
Fair point.
Offensively, you look at some of the national numbers, and I thought, interesting, I saw a few different people yesterday talking about total offense, not good. Scoring offense, better. And then when you talk about pace and pace of play and those adjusted efficiency numbers, we talk about them a lot in basketball, not so much in football. Mark, is that a summer project for you? Maybe digging in deeper to some analytical type numbers?
No, but I do want to do an analytics box, box scores. I want to do an analytical box score, an advanced stats box score next fall. I'm hoping if we don't do that on Saturday, I hope we do it on Sunday next fall, because I do think that adds some enlightenment to what we're doing in the game and helps people see the game in different ways. I think Iowa's offense, I think Brian said yesterday that, you know, basically the offense is there to protect the defense. It took me 20 years to figure that out, and it really is. And if you look at what they want to get out of the offense, time of possession is supremely important. I think the Outback Bowl was a fantastic example of that. Now, they weren't going to go anywhere in the running game, and I think they knew that. I think fans knew that. So when they hit the wall there, What they do? Well, they threw a long touchdown pass to Nick Easley because they set it up really well. They kept their patience. They showed their looks. They invested in trying to look like they wanted to run the ball, and it paid off in that one play. And you know they won the game by 5 points. So I think people, you know, if you look at Iowa's offense, yeah, the raw numbers are going to be ugly most years. But most years, I think there are a couple of one. My most important number is 30 points a game. And you're right, Trent. Last year, they were 31-8. That's only been done twice in 10 years. And I think both those. I think it was 2015 was the last one. So when Iowa is at 30 points, that's a good thing. But Iowa doesn't have to be at 30 points to have a good season either.
Mark Morehouse, Cedar Rapids Gazette. Mark, one of the question marks going into the spring practice was identifying depth on the defensive line. John Wagner, kid from Dowling, he's seemingly ready to play now. Is he one of the guys that's getting talked about? Of course, Nixon was the big buzz name this offseason. Would he or won't he? And he's going to. So how about defensive line depth? Have they, maybe not comfortable, but are they identifying those guys that they think that they can plug in?
I'll say this about John Wagner. I'm really interested in seeing him play because we really haven't yet. So this Friday, 5:30, Beattie and family get to see the Hawkeye spring practice thingy. I don't know what the form will be, but I really do want to see John Wagner. He was a very highly talented recruit. He's a big developed guy. I just want to see where if he's quick enough. Is he explosive enough? Is he sudden enough off the edge? But I think he's got a big enough body where I think he can play a whole bunch of different things, and he's only a redshirt freshman. So I don't think there's a final answer on him. I'm just interested to see where he's headed. But I do think Iowa can get to 8 defensive linemen next year, and I think that's hugely important. Yesterday we listened to Phil say how important the defensive line was for Iowa's defense last year. I think it still has a chance to be pretty good. I think maybe the tackles have a chance if Davion Nixon can get in there and be, you know, maybe what we think he should be. I think that the tackles have a chance to be better. And then A.J. Epineza, can Chauncey Golston be maybe Anthony Nelson-like? I think he can. So I think the defensive line has another chance to really hold the fort for Iowa. And John Wagner's a guy I really want to see Friday, for sure.
So when Wally Szczerbiak in Miami of Ohio comes to town, I don't think Wally's still part of the university, but when they come in, who trots out of the field for Iowa defensively at the cash position first?
I think it's DJ Johnson. He's been the name that has been brought up most and the most consistently. And yesterday I did think it was interesting. Phil Parker, you know, last year it was Imani Hooker who kind of the inaugural season of that position, he ran it. He was a safety. He moved over from strong safety. It was interesting. Phil Parker yesterday said he wants a corner to do it. He wants more coverage. Now, is justification there? You know, a lot of times you want a bigger body there because teams can maybe scheme at that spot and run right over you. I thought it was interesting. He said, you know, that guy's going to be covering a wide receiver. He'll be able to hold his own in the running game there. They're not worried about that, and so they want a corner. And I think DJ Johnson. But he threw in Julius Brent's name at the end of that. Brent's is a 6'2", 200-pound kid now. Last year he was 6'2", 180-ish. Now he's closer to 200. I'm kind of intrigued by that.
That would make some sense. And they've got a luxury of having some size at that position, no doubt about it. If he's up to 200 pounds, that might be the answer. You know, Nate Stanley, it's his job, but and maybe that's the reason there seemingly hasn't been a lot of conversation about the quarterback spot because it's a foregone conclusion. What kind of spring has he had? Was Brian asked about his QB yesterday?
I thought Brian said exactly the thing you needed to say about Nate Stanley. I mean, he's done a lot, and he's a senior, and he's accomplished a lot. But and I having 3 years or however many years now of talking to Stanley after games and before games, you know, a lot, I do think what Brian said yesterday, he's focused on improvement, and that's really kind of the bottom line for him. If Stanley improves, I think he can be a high draft pick, maybe even a second round, maybe even a first round if he puts up incredible numbers. So I think that there's a lot on the line this season for him professionally in the game of football. It'll be interesting to see how far he can take that. I think, you know, if he gets the help he needs, you know, if he gets the blocking he needs, I think his pocket presence is one thing that still needs improvement. But if he focuses on improvement and if he actually improves, and that's going to be worth a win or two for Iowa, and it's going to be worth a couple, I think at least a couple rounds for him in the draft.
Mark, NFL draft starts tomorrow. Expected two Hawkeyes. It is, you talked with Brian, I think, about this yesterday. A chance for the football program to be spotlighted, to be seen nationally. Now, I don't know how many 17-year-old kids are watching the NFL draft. I'm sure there are a few, but it's something more I think you can make into a promotional type thing that you show when the kids actually come onto campus. How do you think the university is going to use this?
Good question. I don't know. I think it's already started to work for them, though, Trent. And if you notice, the stars and the tight end recruits have already been through. They got a commitment from a kid, and his name is escaping me right now. I want to say three or four star kid, but, you know, I think Brian's kind of on the lookout for Gronk. This kid was like 6'5", 6'6", 240. The Vocal Kellick kid, I know I'm blowing that, transferring in. They're looking at Iowa, among other schools, wants to transfer out of Rutgers. 6'6 guy, 240-ish. I think Brian is kind of looking for his Gronk guy, and I think he's going to get him because they already got the one guy. I want to say, I'm blanking on his name. I'm sorry. Maybe you guys know. I'm sure that your listeners know. Anyway, they got him. They're looking at this other kid from Rutgers. Those guys are high-level targets. They had the Theo kid in for Canada. These are all high-level targets, so I think it's already working for them. Now, you factor in Thursday night, which should be, you know, ESPN is, they don't, there's a producer, but they, you know, it's going to be a fairly obvious storyline. Two tight ends going the first round from the same school. I think Iowa's going to be on TV a lot on Thursday night, you guys.
I do, too. Was Coach Ferentz going?
You know, I didn't ask that. I should have. A lot of coaches do go.
Yeah.
Ferentz has never been a guy who's been in that sort of background. The last award show I remember him going to is maybe the Heisman Trophy. Yeah, that's kind of not a scene, but other coaches will be there because they're going to use this. Lincoln Riley will be there with Kyler Murray because he wants to promote the Oklahoma brand. I think that's smart, and when you get to that level, things like this really, really matter.
Off the ball, weird final question for you. With the, we're waiting for Governor Reynolds to sign the sports gambling bill. You, as a newspaper beat writer for the Iowa Hawkeyes, is it going to change? I know I send it to you and Doc and your guys' podcast, Over Unders, all the time. I know you know about gambling, but is it going to change how you are as a writer or maybe what your bosses say you need to be as a writer?
You know, good question.
That's two, by the way, Trent.
It will enter my content more. I'll probably have a thing every week, not a very long thing. But the spread will be something we talk about. Injury news that, a couple years ago, I found out the night before. This is 2006 or 8, somewhere in there. I found out Drew Tate wasn't going to play against Syracuse.
I remember that well.
I imagine that information would be highly valuable right now or in the coming weeks and months and games and whatever with sports betting. I don't know what to do with that information. Back then, I had nowhere to put it because I wasn't really even on the internet. But now I'm totally on the internet, and man, that's a lot. You know what? It's going to be weird. You know, if I report something like that, and I actually physically see me moving the line. let's bring it. You know, I know it's a new day. It's a new day and age. And, I'm for the sports gambling thing. I'm not a sports gambler. I'm not a gambler at all, really. But I am. I do think that's an element of entertainment. And I don't. You know what? I'm for it. It's fine. You know, have fun with it.
You know, last year, Mark, as we go back to Chicago Big Ten media days, as you well recall, it was a talking point. Delaney brought it up. A couple of the coaches brought it up. How are they going to handle it? And then they didn't do anything about it. Now that it's, you know, full blown as it is seemingly,
right.
Something's got to change in advance of this season. There's got to be some transparency. What did they call it? They were going to call it some kind of report. It wasn't an injury list.
Oh,
what was the term Delaney used?
Eligibility report?
Something like that, yeah.
I remember that Harbaugh was asked about that. Harbaugh is a coach who doesn't give the out of depth chart during the week. So, and he said, "Oh yeah, we'll open the books on that.
Yeah.
We'll see on that." I think they'll have to, and I think that's probably straightforward. Is probably the way to do it. If you have an injury, report it, and then let every line move or whatever. I think transparency is needed there.
Yep.
and you're, I'm with you, Ken. I'm skeptical on whether we get it.
We shall see. Mark, thank you. We'll talk to you next week. Appreciate it.
You bet. Thank you, guys.
Good to talk to you. Mark Morehouse, Cedar Rapids Gazette. It was a huge talking point, Trent, last year in Chicago, and then nothing happened.
But they didn't have to at that time.
No, but it seemed like they were going to.
I think it was just the opening salvo. See, I never read it the way that you did, because you felt we were going to get an injury report, and I now, eight states, including Iowa, and New Jersey in the footprint of the Big Ten, Pennsylvania, you kind of, don't you have to?
I think so. I think they all do.
Right.
We'll see how that's handled. That's something to watch, right?
Speaking of something to watch, Game 7 tonight?
Yeah, you know, it's of the series, the Caps and the Hurricanes I've watched a little of it. I watched Svechnikov get his block cleaned by, clock cleaned by Ovechkin. I'll watch, but I'm going to watch the Cubs a lot tonight. I don't know, this Cubs team, I like watching these Cubbies play.
Got Brewers-Cardinals this afternoon?
Yeah, it's coming right up right away, is it not?
Yes.
Gio Gonzalez is a Brewer, by the way, as they add to their pitching staff.
They
he is no
that.
Longer unemployed. Cole Hamels tonight, I know, goes for Chicago. I'm not sure.
Bueller.
Mr. Bueller, the youngster. That'll be a pretty good matchup. Well, the Cubbies were last night. That's a good offense that Quintana shut down. Good offense. Murph and Andy are next. Are you sitting in for the Fanatics today?
I will. I'll be in Ross's chair today from 4 until 6, and then hosting Hawk Central from 6 until 7 o'clock
tonight. You
are tonight? I am.
Boy, oh boy.
Been called up.
That's 5 hours of Trent Condon here on 1460 KXNO.
Give the people what they want.
You got to. Yeah. The Morning Rush starts it all again tomorrow at 6. Thanks for being here, 1460 KXNO.
Des Moines.
Last hour on the Herd.
Okay.
Here's kind of where I fall on this, is that the fact that they're still considering taking Kyler Murray, that's basically code for we're taking him, we're just waiting for the best offer for Josh Rosen. That's what it feels like for me.
There's more to come
right now
in the Herd.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Ladies and gentlemen.
You guys can laugh at me all you want.
This is the Herd.
Oh, yeah.
The Herd. With Colin Cowherd.
I'm setting the tone.
Best show on radio.
This is the Herd.
Broadcasting live from Los Angeles. The Herd with Colin Cowherd starts now.
Here we go, live in L.A., hour two. This is the Herd. Wherever you may be and however you may be listening, we are again live in beautiful Los Angeles on iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio. And FS1, Rick Bucher in 15 minutes. Joy Taylor is joining me on a very fast and frenetic first hour of the show. Draft is tomorrow. Wife even acknowledged to me she's going out tomorrow.
I should just let you be, huh?
Just me. Me and an iPad and like four TVs. Unbelievable. So happy. I mean, honey, I love you. But I got a chance to see the Jets, you know, pick an interior lineman. I'm not using coasters tomorrow. I'm putting Coronas on. On the table.
Coronas. We're going to have more than one beer.
Oh, yeah. Tomorrow, the idea of watching interior linemen drafted is fascinating to me.
It's a meat and potatoes draft.
It is a meat and potatoes draft after the first pick, of course, which will probably be a quarterback. What's the hardest thing in the world to do? Lift big weight, run real fast. I contend the hardest thing in the world to do is to get successful people to change. They just don't. Money makes us think we're smarter than we are. Success is a body armor. It is really hard to get smart people to change. Smart, successful people. And I put successful more than smart. Some people that are successful aren't that smart. They're just successful for whatever reasons. Bobby Knight, really successful. Bobby, one and done, game's changing. Just wouldn't change. Bobby Knight, the coach, is Russell Westbrook, the player. Russell Westbrook's really successful. If you'd have told any parent that your son at 12 years old is going to be an NBA superstar, have a $100 million shoe deal, make $300 million playing basketball, and win the MVP, would that be a successful child? Yes, Russell's really successful. But he's not going to change. You cannot change his game. That would be changing his personality. If you told Russell, be more passive, that would be total weakness. That's not who he is. So Charles Barkley suggested what I think is the only way to fix this OKC problem. And again, they're a playoff team. It's not the end of the world. They win a bunch of games. They sell out their arena. There are bigger problems in the NBA, basically 20 teams below them. But here's what Charles Barkley suggested OKC do.
I think it's time to move Russ to the two, because I think he's too aggressive offensively.
You play Schroeder and Westbrook together all the time?
Yes, because I think he's so good and aggressive. He's always driving at 100 miles an hour. He should drive at 55, sometimes raise to 70. You don't drive your car at 100 all the time.
This is what you do. Schroeder's the one. Russell's the two. You cannot change Westbrook's game, because asking to change his game would be changing his personality. But you can change his position. You can change his position. He's a little stubborn as a dude. His game's a little stubborn. Okay, so let's change the position. It's futile. There was a moment this year, they were having a media scrum. It was in March. It was after kind of a bad loss. And somebody suggested during the media scrum the next day at shoot around about changing. And Westbrook snapped, I'm reading it here, change what? Have I changed in 11 years? Westbrook interrupted. No, you're not going to change his game. And I just don't think, by the way, what Barkley said is what I said about John Wall when he broke into this league. I said this 8 years ago about John Wall. I said he's going to be going 100 miles an hour. And it's a 70-mile-an-hour league, is that Westbrook and John Wall and Iverson, to a large degree, were playing by themselves. You can still get 8 assists and play by yourself when you have the ball in your hands. But I think what you have to do is you have to move Russ to the 2. Schroeder's at the 1. He's a solid player. Paul's your 3. Adams is your big. And then you got to go out and draft another shooter or 2. Do whatever you can to fix that issue. But I think Barkley's right here. And I think Russell, the player, reminds me of Bobby Knight, the coach. Once you get successful and have stacks of money, and you've got rings and awards, MVP and coach of the year and titles, getting successful people to change, about the only way you can do it is if you walk up to them and say, listen, if you don't stop smoking, you're going to die. Well, I'm going to die. Okay, I'll change. I heard a doctor say that once. He said, it's much easier to get some people to change that don't have options. He said, once people are successful and have options, to convince them in a doctor's office to change their lifestyle, they don't want to do it. Hey, look at me, I'm successful. He goes, the one way to change is, you're going to die if you don't change. Okay, I'll change. I'll stop smoking. I'll stop eating, you know, pork chops for breakfast or whatever you eat. And I think with Russ, you just change his position. You still say, play your butt off, be a human tornado, be relentless, be athletic. Don't screw with his game. It is what it is. We're just not going to give you 31 shots. You're going to get 19 because Schroeder's going to make different decisions on who to pass the ball to.
Well, this is the difference between being great and being the greatest, right? You have to evolve. It's hard to get to the top. It's harder to stay at the top. That's why athletes like Tom Brady or LeBron are so fascinating, because they've been able to be great for such a consistent amount of time.
And evolve.
And evolve, because the game is not going to stay the same, no matter what sport or what company or what business you're in. Everything changes. You have to stay with it and find the way to be great with that change.
Yeah. Chris Carter talked about that on First Things First this morning, what he would do if he ran the Oklahoma City Thunder.
The change that needs to be made is the franchise needs to revolve around Paul George. I need to somehow get him healthier for the playoffs. Let's not forget, George didn't play well in the playoffs, but justifiably, he did have a bad shoulder injury. He was spectacular the first two-thirds of the season. So for me, if I'm the franchise, all right, Paul George is going to be the guy. And when I start getting in games like this, I'm going to lean on him more, because it's easier, too, when your leader is a two-way player, compared to being the way Russ and the way Russ plays the game.
And I think I talked about this to start the show an hour ago. Parents do this all the time. They sit down and have the big talk with their teenagers, and it's uncomfortable. But parents always have the built-in authority. They're parents. I think you sit down and you try to. There's an old saying in coaching: as you're kicking a guy in the butt, you're patting him on the back, and you're going to kick Russ in the butt and pat him on the back. You're going to say, Russell, we love what you bring to the table. We love your athleticism. We love your intensity. We're going to move you to the 2, and it's going to be the same game. Because if you ask him to change his game and his position, you lost him. You just ask him, want to move you over to the 2. There'll still be times you'll have the ball, but we got to get, we want to be a more distribution based at the point. And Schroeder's our guy. And so you have the big talk with him and how it lands. You've enabled him for a long time. I don't have a lot of pity for OKC. If I could see this coming 3 years ago and I don't work in a front office, OKC should have seen this coming 5 years ago. I shouldn't be able to get it right before a team. Okay, I've been on this for like 3.5 years now. This is not, you can't win with this. I could bring out the hammer today on Westbrook. There's no point in that. I won the debate. The key is now, where do you go from here? And I think Barkley's right. Just move him over, Schroeder in, Westbrook too. And I also think, I want to show it again, you know, we talk a lot about Westbrook because they've really been the team that got us into this series. I mean, if this was, nobody watched last year when Portland lost to the Pelicans because you didn't have the marquee guy to get you into the theater. And that is definitely Westbrook. But Damian Lillard, for a 5-game series that was lopsided, was just a fascinating player. And I think he now moves into the top 4 point guards in the NBA, and it's taken him a while. What I like about this is that Damian Lillard is a great example for all you college kids. Okay, for all you college guys that think you're going to walk into the NBA and take it over, Dame walked into this league. He's been swept in series. He hasn't made the playoffs. He's had injuries. He's had to share the ball sometimes with CJ McCollum. It has been a long road for Dame to this moment. This has not been easy. This has not been linear. Michael Jordan, a lot of you forget, you didn't watch him if you're 20 or 30 years old. Michael Jordan got the you-know-what kicked out of him for 6 years in the East. He got his butt kicked. He got tossed like a crouton in a salad bowl all over the floor. And then Michael got that body armor. So by the time Michael was the man and Larry Bird was done and the Pistons were done, Michael was just a rock emotionally, physically, and Dame's a rock. Because Dame's seen the bottom. Dame's missed the playoffs. Dame's been hurt. Dame went to Weber State. Dame's been swept. It just shows you how hard the NBA is. This idea, I'm a star, give me the shots. That was Magic Johnson's life. He walked into the league and had Kareem. It doesn't work that way. That's not the way the league works. That is once in a lifetime. Michael Jordan got crapped on, and Barkley did, and Stockton did, and Isaiah did, and everybody did except Magic, who just happened to inherit, I don't know, the best center of all time. Let's go to the shot that changed the world, at least for Dame.
8 on the shot clock and game clock. Westbrook into the lane on Aminu. Forced up a shot. It rolls off. Rebounded Chief. In a tie ball game, Damian will bring it up the floor with 14.
You want the last shot.
Damian clears midcourt. He's got 11. Tied at 115. Crowd rising to the feet. George will defend Lillard. Spread floor. Lillard with 47 tonight. Working it down to 2-1. A deep three. Oh!
That's just a great scene. Right next to the fans at the Rose Garden. Yeah, it's wonderful. Steph, Harden, Kyrie, and Lillard. The killers. Coming up next, Rick Bucher plus the Pittsburgh Steelers have made a move, and I think it's a smart one. That's coming up. Have you tried the incredible high-quality meat from ButcherBox? You're going to be blown away. Okay, first of all, they work with the best farms and companies committed to raising animals humanely. Ethical process. Better quality, better tasting, more nutrient-dense meat. No added hormones ever. They deliver it for free right to your door. 100% grass-fed beef, organic chicken, Bristol Bay, Alaska, wild-caught sockeye salmon, and over 20 different cuts of meat in customizable boxes. All sorts of options, again with free shipping. That's a month's worth of the best tasting meat from ButcherBox, less than $6 a meal. ButcherBox offering my listeners the ultimate breakfast bundle. 2 packs of bacon, 2 pounds of breakfast sausage, plus $20 off your first box. All you got to do, sign up. That's it, sign up. Go to ButcherBox.com/herd, H-E-R-D. Grass-fed beef, organic chicken, Bristol Bay, Alaska, wild-caught sockeye salmon.
Come on, kids. We're late.
Honey, the car won't start.
Mom, the dog just sat on my science project.
Life can be stressful, but getting life insurance shouldn't be. That's why there's Ethos. Ethos is a modern kind of life insurance that's super fast, incredibly affordable, and very uncomplicated. At GetEthos.com, there are no medical exams for policies covering under $1 million, no hours of paperwork or meetings with pushy representatives. It only takes 10 minutes to apply, and you can rest assured knowing you've taken steps to protect your family. And in most cases, with Ethos, you can have that peace of mind for less than a cup of coffee a day, with no hidden fees. Having life insurance can free you from stress. Getting life insurance shouldn't cause it. Discover how uncomplicated life insurance can be at Ethos. Get your free instant quote and submit your complete application in minutes. Just go to GetEthos.com. That's ETHOS. GetEthos.com. GetEthos.com.
Hey guys, shooting a promo.
This is The Herd.
3, 2, 1.
With Colin Cowherd.
I'm not going to bring out the hammer on Westbrook today. What's the point? Why be mean-spirited? I'm not a bully. That game wasn't about Westbrook. That game was about Damian Lillard. The series was about Damian Lillard. Westbrook got you to the series. Just like movie stars get you into the theater. And then you watch the movie and you realize there's a new movie star. It's official. Damian Lillard has moved himself in to the top four elite point guards in the league. I'd call them the killers. Steph, Harden, Lillard, and Kyrie. They are the killers. You don't want the ball near their hands with a minute left. Westbrook, okay, I'll be a jerk once. He's the momentum killer.
8 on the shot clock and game clock. Westbrook into the lane on Aminu. Forced up a shot, it rolls off.
This is The Herd.
There is a lot of ego there.
With Colin Cowherd.